Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Allah versus the art of the deal. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol Lieberman, a psychiatrist and your terrorist therapist. Well, today we're going to be talking about Allah versus the art of the deal. Now, the art of the deal is Trump's book, and which I have sitting on my desk, and it is brilliant. It's logical. It works. Look how far it took Trump to become a billionaire, a president twice, outfoxing Lawfare, Trump derangement syndrome, and at least two assassination attempts. So the art of the deal worked for him. But can it work against the illogical zeal that radical Islamists have for Allah? This is the religious zeal that the Hamas showed on October 7th as they raped and killed Israelis in the most feral, primitive ways. So that's today's question. And you can decide for yourself what the answer is by the end. I'll give you a little spoiler alert. It is not clear. I also want to say that I do have my faith in Trump. I have always supported Trump, but I do hope that he has either read the Quran himself or has advisors who are extremely knowledgeable about radical Islam. Okay, so let's start. Trump took a visit from May 13th to the 16th of this year, and it was an amazing visit. No other president has done this. And there was a lot of pomp and circumstance, but there was a lot of seriousness too, because the fate of the world, actually, you know, history is going to look back on this and realize that the fate of the world rested on these 3.5 days. So let's talk about the pomp first. There's nothing wrong with the pomp. It was amazing. Did you see all those camels? He arrived at the Saudi Arabian capital with Arabian horses prancing along the beast, his car. And that was in Saudi Arabia. And then in Qatar, it was camels, which were also served to eat, apparently. I don't know if he ate them, but, you know, I wonder if he had people tasting his food. I would certainly hope that he did. I know he's careful about that in general. I would hope that he would be extra careful about it in his visit to the Middle East. Then he went to the United Arab Emirates, and he delighted in the Al Ayala hair flip dancers who performed, and every place there was a palace, one beautiful palace after another. So his goal for this, of course, was peace in the Middle East, but also it was the role that he honed on The Apprentice, America's businessman. Now, so far, it seems like he had quite a conquest in terms of the business aspects of it. And I'll talk more about that as we go along. So he visited, as I was saying, he visited Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. He also, while he was in while he was in Saudi Arabia, he also took a side conference with the head of Syria. So let's see. Let's start. So Saudi Arabia. So in Saudi Arabia, he met with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and he called for an increase in Saudi Arabia's investment in the United States, and they signed a strategic economic partnership, he and the Crown Prince. And they also made agreements, this is kind of interesting, to cooperate on diseases, on agreements between the Saudi Space Agency and NASA, and between the government of Saudi Arabia and the National Zoological Park to establish a dedicated exhibit for the Arabian leopard. Now, there's, if nothing else, at least we get to see the Saudi Arabian leopard. Now, Saudi Arabia, I mean, each country that he visited, and when he spoke with the head of Turkey, I'm sorry, with the head of Syria, each country was a mixed bag. There are some things that are positive towards the United States, and there are some things in the history of the country that are very negative. So, for example, with Saudi Arabia, there is a lawsuit going on, it's long been going on, by the victims of 9/11 and their families. It's a class action lawsuit filed against Saudi Arabia because their claim that the kingdom provided material to support Al-Qaeda that facilitated the attacks. And also, it says they claim that Saudi Arabia provided financial and logistical support to Al-Qaeda, and that they were aware of the 9/11 attack before it happened, of plans for the attack. So that's why Saudi Arabia is a mixed bag. That's one of the reasons. So now, while he was in each of these countries, Trump encouraged the countries, the leaders, to join the Abraham Accords. Now, when he mentioned that at the meeting that he had with various leaders in Saudi Arabia, who came to Saudi Arabia, when he encouraged was trying to encourage them to sign the Abraham Accords, there was silence in the audience. So we'll see how that goes. Then he. Let's talk about the meeting with the Syrian president, Ahmed al-Sharaa. Now, Syria is a definite mixed bag, and I'm not going to take it would take too long to go through the whole history of the relations between Syria and America, but I will tell you this, that he met with the Syrian president, Ahmad al-Sharaa, and who was called Abu Mohammed al-Julani from 2017 until January 2025. So he changed his name. Now, he's trying to show that he is no longer a terrorist. He was the leader of Hayat Tahrir el-Sham, which was also called the Syrian Liberation Group. It was a Sunni jihad group that had been linked to Al-Qaeda and was working to overthrow Syrian President Assad. Now, finally in January 2025, they reached their goal. And then, Abu Mohammed al-Julani became Ahmad al-Sharaa and renounced his terrorist ties. And he claimed that he had broken with Al-Qaeda years before. So he reverted to his birth name. And he trimmed his beard, he took off his fatigues, and he donned a suit. Now, is this man different in his suit than he was in his terrorist garb? That is the question. Is he still a jihadist? Does he still believe Muhammad's dictum, war is deceit? Now, that is ba the basic basis for me being concerned about some of these visits and some of the things that happened, because I hope, that Trump knows that Muhammad, the prophet Muhammad, who the Quran is based upon, well, the whole religion is based upon, basically, at least in some ways. I know that there's an extra book, but anyhow, Muhammad had always, the prophet Muhammad has always said, war is deceit. So how can we believe any of these wonderful things that these countries promised that also have ties, although they're, saying that they renounce them, to terrorism? So I hope that Trump, and I tr have to trust that Trump knows this war is deceit line. He did urge the Syrian president to sign on to the Abraham Accords. And he also told him to asked him, advised him to tell foreign terrorists to leave Syria. He wanted him to deport Palestinian terrorists and to help the US prevent the resurgence of the Islamic State and assume responsibility for Islamic State detention centers in Syria's northeast. Now, the only problem, I'd like to believe that the president has changed his stripes, not just his suit. But the problem is that when he had this meeting with the president of Syria, the president of Turkey was also on the phone. And the president of Turkey is not to be trusted. The president of Turkey certainly does have caliphate aspirations. So that, we'll have to see is with that. Same thing, we're going to have to see about, now, let me just m mention, during Trump's campaign, he said that he was determined to end the cycle of endless wars and establish a new era of peace. He's trying to do that, of course, with Ukraine and Russia and so on, and the Middle East, the two main places where there are wars going on. So this is all in keeping with what he promised to do as president, months ago, for many, many months. So, he's trying to do it, and certainly trying to bring peace to the world is a noble ambition. Okay, so now let's look at his next stop, which is Qatar or Qatar. I have heard it pronounced both ways, and I will probably interchange my pronunciation of it. In Qatar, in Doha, the main capital city, he met with Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. Now, and hours later, let me just see something. Did I mention? Just want to make sure that I mentioned that Trump did make business deals in Saudi Arabia that benefited America. Okay, so moving on to Qatar. So he met with the with Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. Now, and there he got Qatar Airways to sign an agreement to purchase 210 planes from Boeing. Of course, that might set back Boeing's how fast Boeing gets the plane that they've been working on for ages, and is still not finished for to be Air Force One. But anyhow, he also visited. Now, Qatar is a real mixed bag. Also, he there they have our American Air Force Base is there. They host an American Air Force Base in Qatar. That's Al Udeid Air Base, and they when Trump was there. He made a visit to the air base, and let me see. He held a campaign-like rally for the troops at the airbase, and he brought Lee Greenwood, who's famous for the wonderful song "God Bless the USA," which is what Trump plays or played during all his campaign stops, and I play it on my music video that I send around New York and Washington, D.C. on the anniversaries of 9/11. And you can find my don't not to you after you listen to this whole podcast, you can go to my website, terroristtherapist.com, and you can watch the videos that I have for 9/11, and also there's a video for 10/7. So in any case, so Lee Greenwood, sang that song, and I'm sure it's such a moving song about America. It's such a patriotic song. The Qatar is the country that gave Trump the plane to use to in the until the Boeing plane for him for Air Force One is ready, whenever that will happen. And there is a controversy about that. But anyhow, Trump said that the Prime Minister, Qatari Prime Minister Mohammed bin Abdurrahman Al Thani, was insulted by the backlash that Trump got from saying that he's going to accept this gift. Okay, so that's Qatar. Let me see, there's more about Qatar. As I said, Qatar is a real mixed bag, especially if you look historically. There are things that are that were there are a lot of negative things. The most negative, well, I don't know if it's the most looking historically, but currently the most negative is that they host and are still hosting as we speak, as I speak, they are still hosting the leaders of Hamas. And they were hosting the leaders when on October 7th, 2023, when Hamas, raided Israel and raped and murdered and were just animals towards Israelis. So that you have to wonder, and they're still hosting them in Doha. So how do you trust a country that is, the friend of the friend is the enemy? I mean, they're friends of Hamas. So how do you trust them? All right, we will answer that question. Well, we will give you more information for you to answer that question when we come back. Let me just mention a couple of negatives here. Well, no, let me I'll tell you there are positives and negatives, negatives and positives from Qatar, and that makes the whole makes it risky. The whole thing is risky. And really, the whole trip was risky for Trump, one for his own survival, his own health. There are enough people who try to assassinate him when he's in America and he's surrounded by Secret Service. And yes, of course, he was surrounded by Secret Service in the Middle East, but it's a little less controllable in the Middle East than it is in America. So stay tuned. When we come back, I'll tell you the positives and negatives about Qatar. And then we're going to talk about his visit to the United Arab Emirates. And they signed on to the they are signers to the Abraham Accords, but still, there are pluses and minuses, a mixed bag for them as well. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about Allah versus the art of the deal. And as I mentioned at the beginning, Trump's art of the deal is brilliant, it's logical, it works, but can it work against the illogical zeal that radical Islamists have for Allah and the religious zeal that was evident on October 7th as Hamas raped and killed Israelis in the most feral or primitive ways? So that's what we're trying to decide. We're looking at President Trump's stops in his recent Middle East visits. And each of the places that he visited, and also in the meeting that he had with the president of Syria, there are pros and cons. It's a mixed bag of things that are positive towards America and things that are very risky. In fact, the whole trip was risky for him to go. And really, it might be something that determines the fate of the world. You know, he went, I mean, the one of the art of the deal was basically also revealing his talent as a businessman. And just like his hosting of the television show The Apprentice, he is a brilliant businessman, brilliant maker of deals. The only problem is, or question is, whether one side of the deal is lying. You know, I was talking about this a lot when I think it was 2015, whenever it was, when America was talking with what made a deal, made the Iran arms deal or the Iran nuclear deal, you know, where we trusted, and that wasn't Trump's fault. It was a different president, shall we say. That was assuming that Iran was telling the truth. And then since then, we have discovered, we know that they weren't, that they were lying, that they are continuing to enrich their nuclear weapons, to become more sophisticated with their nuclear weapons. So they lied. And like, duh, you know, that shouldn't be a shock. Again, deceit, war is deceit, the Prophet Muhammad said. So now let's get back to Qatar, or Qatar, whatever way you would like to say it. Yes, let's see here. Where was I? He, the at least Syria's al-Sharar claims that he has changed and is no longer a jihadi. But the leader of Qatar, Al-Thani, is not even making a similar claim. He's not claiming that he changed from being a terrorist, that he's no longer a terrorist. He's not saying that. And as I mentioned before, the leaders of Hamas celebrated on October 7th from a comfortable room in a hotel in Doha. And there has been no evidence that Qatar has changed any of its stances since then. And they are still hosting the leaders of Hamas. So, will all these business deals and all this, you know, goodwill that Trump is exerting, will that, what will be the effect of that? Okay, so he signed a series of agreements with the President Al-Thani of Qatar. And these agreements included purchasing Qatar pur purchasing Boeing aircraft, as I mentioned, and other business deals. And then, of course, you know, as I mentioned, there is the issue of the free jet. So now, even some senators, a Republican senator from Florida, Senator Rick Scott, has said, "Qatar is not, in my opinion, a great ally. I mean, they support Hamas. So what I'm worried about is the safety of the president." And that's what I'm worried about too. Worried about, you know, the president, the jet not being safe for the president. And I'll go into that in a little why I say that in the next segment. But like, look at what in 2017, when Trump was president, he accused Qatar of harboring terrorism. He said, quote, "The nation of Qatar, unfortunately, has historically been a funder of terrorism at a very high level." So have they changed? Since then, there are some positive movements, I'll say that. Since then, Qatar has become a major non-NATO ally to the US. In 2022, they became home to the our air base, and it is one of the largest Middle Eastern air bases of the US. And they also became a key hub for US Central Command operations. See, these are positive things, okay? I mean, you have to, I guess you could say, give people a second chance. If they got rid of the Hamas leaders shooed them out of their country, I would feel a lot better. So they have been, supposedly, they've been the meeting place in any case for peace and hostage negotiations between Hamas and Israel. And they, in March, this past March, there were negotiations led by US and Qatari mediators, and that led to the release of an American hostage, George Glesman, who had been imprisoned by the Taliban in Afghanistan for over 2 years. So they have been doing some positive, taken some positive steps. Okay. Now let's go to the third country that Trump visited, which is the United Arab Emirates. Now, so he went to the capital, Abu Dhabi, and he toured two mosques. Now, again, remember, the United Arab Emirates signed the Abraham Accords. Let me just mention a little bit about the Abraham Accords. This was Trump's amazing accomplishment, one of his, but to me, I especially appreciated his accomplishment of the Abraham Accords. Since I am Jewish and I have visited Israel and I am actually currently helping Israelis psychologically deal with terrorism by Zoom. I've been doing that for quite a while. Anyhow, the Abraham Accord was signed on September 15th, 2020, in Washington, D.C., and it was a treaty to help calm the Arab-Israeli conflict, to make peace. And the original signatories, are Bahrain, Israel, and the United Arab Emirates. Now, subsequently, Morocco also signed, and Sudan. But now, when Gaza invaded Israel, it really put the Abraham Accords up in the air. And that was the point. That was one of the points of the invasion of Israel. It was to destroy the Abraham Accord and to prevent other countries from signing on to the Abraham Accord. Hamas did not like the Abraham Accord because that was a way for Middle East countries to make peace with Israel. And that's the last thing that Hamas wants. And of course, Hamas is a proxy of Iran, and that is definitely the last thing that Iran wants. So, also, October 7th, they also chose that date. Now, of course, they've been planning to invade Israel. I mean, they've always wanted to invade and destroy Israel. It's not like this was a new, it didn't, this didn't just occur to them because of the Abraham Accords, but the Abraham Accord made it more imminent, made them feel that it was more urgent to destroy any kind of agreements for peace in the Middle East. Now, interestingly, they chose October 7th also, because it was Putin's birthday. This was told to me by an officer in the Israeli Defense Forces. And interesting that that Hamas feels like they want to make a tribute to Putin. I mean, it also reveals something else about them. They have friends all over. Then let's see. All right, well, let me get back to the United Arab Emirates. So what was interesting was that he visited two mosques there, and it was the first time he visited a mosque as president, and he visited two in 2 days. When he was a presidential candidate in 2016, he reacted to President Barack Obama's visit to a mosque in February 2016 by saying maybe he feels comfortable there. Well, yeah, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, I frequently mention how Obama has not given up his attachment, his beliefs in radical Islam, that when he was taught in a madrasa as a little boy, it was very, whatever you learn with religion that you learn as a child is very powerful and it lasts. And whatever the religion is, you know, Christianity, Judaism, if you go to school in that religion, assuming you don't have a bad experience doing that, I mean, you know, I don't know, something, you fail your homework and you get an F and you decide you hate that religion because of it, that kind of thing. But I have long said that Obama is still a terrorist, and his the way that he became BFFs with Iran and lots of different there I'm not gonna that's a whole other story but there were many indications throughout his presidency that he was BFFs with the terrorists, not just Iran but other terrorists in the Middle East. Now so he toured the Sheikh Zayed Grand Mosque, and he also toured, let's see, he toured two mosques, and he was saying how beautiful they were. He toured them in his sock feet because that's what you're supposed to do. And this second mosque that he toured was built to spread a bigger message. Like it was as part of the Abrahamic family house. The mosque is situated on the same property as a church and a synagogue to push peace and coexistence amongst these three Abrahamic religions. So, and that, of course, is what the Abraham Accord is supposed to do. So, the Abraham Accords were signed at the end of his first term as president, and with some help from his son-in-law Jared Kushner, and it normalized relations between Israel and the UAE and Israel and Bahrain, and then, as I read, a handful of other countries have joined since. Now, he also tried during this trip, as I mentioned earlier. He tried to give Saudi Arabia a subtle push, or maybe not so subtle, toward the signing of them again, because the movement was derailed by the Gaza War. I mean, people, everything was coming together after the Abraham Accords, and then the Gaza War happened, and so Hamas was successful in disrupting that, the move towards peace. So Trump had said in Saudi Arabia, "It is my fervent hope. It is my fervent hope, wish, and even my dream that Saudi Arabia will soon be joining the Abraham Accords, but you'll do it in your own time." You know, he's very clever. You cannot underestimate or overestimate Trump because he really has an ace up his sleeve all the time. And so, you know, again, just like with the art of the deal, he, you know, you might think when he's saying, but you'll do it in your own time, you might think, oh, wait, what? He's not like telling them he wants them to do it now. Well, you know, there's a reason behind that. He also brought up his dream, the Riviera of the Middle East, you know, where he wants to turn Gaza into the Riviera of the Middle East. And which I don't know if you've seen pictures of what he had in mind, but it looks beautiful. I think it's a great idea. But apparently, Arab leaders are rejecting it. He said that the US could take Gaza and it could become a freedom zone. I mean, it's certainly better than what it is now, and it certainly needs a ton of money to be poured into it to make it livable again, no less, you know, pretty. So I think they should rethink that. I think they should agree with that. So you know, he made this announcement when alongside Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about the Riviera plan, and I think he might have also mentioned it before. He keeps mentioning it. He still would like that to happen, but the Arab leaders got together in Cairo and hatched an alternative Gaza plan. And I don't think it was one that was friendly to Israel. Okay, let's see. Where am I? So that's that for all his countries. Now, in the next segment, I'm going the countries that he visited on this tour. Now, in the next segment, I'm going to talk about whether the things that make it seem like this was a good trip. I mean, a positive trip for peace, basically, is what I'm saying. It's certainly probably been a positive trip for money, for bringing money to America, and that's important because we're in deep trouble financially, almost on the brink of collapse financially. No thanks. It had nothing to do with Trump. This is all because of the Obama-Biden regime. I say Obama-Biden because it was Obama who was influencing Biden, and as we know more and more about Biden having having less and less brains. Of course, I was saying that in when Biden was running for president from his basement, I was trying to warn people. I did so many interviews trying to warn people that Biden had encroaching dementia. And at that time, people were not really voting for Biden. They were just voting for against Trump. And if there would have been a parakeet running for president on behalf of the Democrats, the parakeet would have won at that time, but fortunately things have changed. Have changed, and people, voted for Trump for a second term, overwhelmingly. So in the next segment, I'm going to be talking. I'm going to be looking at two essays that people wrote with opposing views. One is written by a woman, Varda Myers Epstein, for a blog, an American pro-Israel blog called Elders of Zion. And she called hers worries about Trump. She's worried that what Trump is doing is not good for Israel. She's living in Israel at the time, currently, I mean. And then the other essay is by Ruthie Bloom, who is also living in Israel, and she has the opposite view. Now, she wrote her essay on May 9th, which was before his trip, but she it, this was kind of in general. It wasn't just about the trip for both of them. It was sort of a general, should we worry about this? Or is, or should we worry about Trump being less aligned with Netanyahu and Israel? Is that true or not? So stay tuned and we will be discussing that. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking about Allah versus the art of the deal. We've been talking about the various countries that Trump has visited on his Middle East tour in May. And each of the countries, I know it may, it's kind of head spinning, as far as each of the countries have, it's a mixed bag. They're each a mixed bag. They have things that they have done and are doing that are pro-America, pro-Israel, and things that they are doing or have done that are anti-America and Israel. Now, the key thing to remember is that Israel is the canary in the coal mine. And in other words, yes, in madrasas, they teach the Middle East, in the Middle East, they teach kids that the goals, the best goals, how to please Allah when you die, how to be a martyr, and how to make Allah happy, and how to get, 72 virgins and all kinds of other gifts when you die, is if you are part of destroying Israel and killing all Jews. Well, it's not just killing all Jews, it's killing non-believers And the non-believers are the non-believers in radical Islam. So it's everybody, basically, who is not a believer in radical Islam, which is so absurd, how make it shows that the protesters at college campuses and so on, who don't have a clue about history or about the Quran or any of this, they don't realize that a terrorist would kill them in a heartbeat. But they're pro-Hamas, pro-Palestine. Anyhow, the question is, what are the positives that Trump has been able to draw from his visit, from his tour of these different countries? And are will there be any negatives in the future? And so for we know it seems likely in any case. I mean, as of now, Trump has gotten agreements. I mean, the real thing is, as I mentioned before, that the Prophet Muhammad has said, made it very clear, war is deceit, meaning you don't have to tell the truth to your enemies. And oh, and I was starting to say about Israel. Israel is the canary in the coal mine. Whatever happens to Israel is really going to happen to the West. It's already happening to Europe. And so it's not, for anybody who's thinking, oh, well, whatever, I don't like Israel anyway. the anti-Zionists, it's not just about Israel, it's about you, wherever you live. Because the goal of terrorists for over 1,000 years has been and still is to conquer the world. And Iran's leaders have said this many, many times. I don't know why we don't believe them. They have said death to Israel and death to America, and that's what they want. So it is really hard to make deals with an enemy or with someone who you know can lie to you, lie to your face. All right, but I want to be positive about this. So Trump has gotten agreements for investments in America, this, from his Middle East countries. Gotten agreements to invest in healthcare and energy and aluminum and airplanes and entertainment, all kinds of things. And he says they were wooed by others, but there's no more wooing. I think we're in pretty good shape. There's no more wooing. So that may well be that. I mean, we may have wooed them and they may well invest all this money in America. And of course, that would be great. Now, I want to go to these two essays, one by Varda Epstein. This was a piece in the Elders of Zion, an American pro-Israel blog. She's living in Israel. This was in the blog on May 14th. And her blog was called, let's see, it was actually called Trump's Cold Shoulder to Israel, Real or Rumor. So she, her concern is that, he's not as close with the premier, the president of Israel, and he's not as dedicated to Israel in general. So that's what she writes about in her essay, and she gives some examples. She says that people in Israel are feeling, or some people in Israel are feeling worried and confused about the possible cooling of his former warmth toward Israel. And she gave his examples for why she's worried. His making a separate peace with the Houthis, who bombed the airport. Well, almost. They tried to bomb Ben Gurion Airport and they got close. And also, she's worried because Trump has been dealing directly with Hamas behind Israel's back in negotiation to free Adan Alexandra. He's a citizen of both Israel and America, and he was just returned. He was a hostage in Gaza, and he was just returned. So she's upset or worried because Trump made dealings directly with Hamas behind Israel's back, or at least that's the way they presented it to the world. I mean, we don't really know that that it was behind Israel's back. You know, it could have been wink, wink, and Israel knew all about it. But maybe it was easier to get Hamas to release Idan if they thought that they had that Trump hadn't told Israel anything about it. Then also she's worried because Trump lifted sanctions on Syria without obtaining a quid pro quo from Sharah to sign a peace treaty with Israel. He did ask them to, you know, to sign the Abraham Accord, but he didn't wait until they signed it to lift the sanctions. And then and other things, you know, that he did at, while visiting these other countries. So she wrote, Donald, quote, Donald Trump, during his previous administration, brought us the Abraham Accords and established a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. This time around, Israeli Americans voted for him in droves, there being a general feeling among us that Biden was bad for Israel and Trump the opposite. And I, of course, said that a lot, and I still believe that Biden, you know, being ruled by Obama, they were very bad for Israel. So she said, we were frightened for our hostages, needed weapons, and more importantly, a strong voice in support of our war in Hamas. Then she said, it, quote, it began so well. The president gave Israel carte blanche to do as it pleased in Gaza and helped us fight the Houthis. Then, quote, then rumors of a rift. I'm kind of picking out the highlights. I'm not reading her whole essay. Then rumors of a rift began to flow, a narrative built, well, let's see. A narrative built that the U.S. would no longer help Israel fight the Houthis. You know, that actually, I mean, here's the thing, though. We don't really know. I mean, just, you know, Mohammed said war is deceit, but we don't know what Trump said to the head of Israel behind closed doors. Not that it's deceit per se, but I do believe that Trump's loyalty still rests with Israel. But yes, you know, some of these things would give one pause. Israel, this I'm continuing to read her essay. Israel was excluded from the itinerary of Donald Trump's Middle East tour. Well, he could well have done that on purpose. Hello, he's trying to make these other countries, you know, do things. And if Israel was included, they right away they would think that, you know, that he's more a friend of Israel or that he's not, he hasn't given up. You know, he's smarter than that. He knows what he's doing. Trump accepted a very expensive private plane from Qatar. There was a secret US deal to free Edin Alexander. She's listing all the reasons why they're worrying. The murmurs that Trump has turned against Israel have been gathering steam. Nobody I know wants to talk about it much, but there is a thick, nervous tension in the air. This is in Israel. That's my sense, though I keep looking for articles that prove me wrong. I don't want to believe there's a rift. And she's talking in particular about a rift between Trump and Netanyahu, you know, which the head of Israel, and so that would mean Israel. Okay, now here's an essay by Ruthie Bloom, who has the opposite opinion. Let's see. Ruthie Bloom, let me read you some quotes from her essay. She was a former advisor at the office of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Oh, and I should say, to give equal credence to Varda Myers Epstein, she is a very well-respected writer and columnist and everything else. And in fact, she interviewed me for a piece for this same American pro-Israel blog called Elder of Zion. You can find that on my website, terroristtherapist.com. So I've known her for years. So Ruthie Bloom, who also from originally from America, she moved to Israel just like Varda Epstein. And she also is like she writes for other things and so on. So they're kind of equal. And she believes that these rumors of a rift between Donald Trump, President Trump, and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu are a an ulterior motive from two groups of people. She doesn't believe that it's true either, really. She says that it emanates from two sets of extremists, isolationists in the Trump camp and anti-Netanyahu Israelis. The isolationists in the Trump camp consider the slogan, quote, "Make America Great Again," as an excuse for staying out of the world's conflicts, as though battles abroad, even against radical Islamists bent on toppling America and annihilating Israel, are of no concern to Americans, which, of course, I do not believe. We do have to. We can't pre close our eyes. We can't stick our heads in the ground and pretend that the terrorists aren't going to affect America. So that's one group that she says is responsible for for these rumors of the rift. And then in Israel, so that's in America, and then in Israel, it would be the anti-Netanyahu group. It really bothers me that there are some Israelis who are anti-Netanyahu. I am not anti-Netanyahu. I think if it weren't for Netanyahu, Israel, he has saved Israel and continues to do so. He's so much like Trump. He puts his life at stake, at risk, as well. Israelis with separate false claims, among them is that Netanyahu is prolonging the war in Gaza at the expense of the hostages to preserve his coalition. They are happy to also echo this idea that there is a rift. And they consider Netanyahu more dangerous than a nuclear Iran and its terrorist tentacles. Well, of course, that's wrong. So she wrote, though Trump's confusing statements on what a deal with the Islamic Republic would entail, a complete dismantling of its entire nuclear program, or only that which is enriching uranium for military purposes, have provided fodder for journalists. And she goes on. The same goes for hysteria over his announcement of a truce with the Houthis. Since the Iran-backed terrorist group had capitulated and promised to stop attacking ships in the Red Sea, said Trump, the US would cease bombing in Yemen. So let's see. So there, in other words, she's talking about she also is saying that there are some things that make one wonder. There are some things that make one wonder just how devoted, loyal Trump is to Israel. But on the whole, but really, she attributes this question, these rumors, to these two extremist groups. And so let me sort of let me. I don't want to influence you. Of course, I mean, that's kind of, I do kind of want to influence you, the decision is up to you. And quite frankly, nobody can say 100% what the answer is, whether it's going to, whether everything that is going on in the Middle East that Trump is doing, notably on this trip, but also in decisions and agreements and things that he does, even when he gets back in the White House. I mean, this we're gonna time will tell, but these are some of my opinions. First of all, I tweeted when I heard about the plane. I will say, I am not for his accepting the gift of the $400 million plane from Qatar to use as a temporary Air Force One. And it's not so much, I don't care about, like some people are saying, oh, it's a bribe and blah, blah, blah. I don't care about that. What I care about more is that, and I tweeted about this, that the plane is a Trojan horse. I tweeted also, beware Qatarians bearing gifts. And I am worried for Trump's life with this plane. And also, there could be things in the plane that they put in. I mean, especially with AI and with just tech in general, the advancements in tech in general. They could have something in this plane that is spying on Trump, that is taking is has a video camera and an audio, and it could be the plan, whole plan could be great. We'll give him this beautiful plane. He'll use it. And we'll be able to listen in on what he's planning on doing. And, I mean, I've had people counter me and say, oh, you don't think we're going to check for that? Sure, I think America's going to check for that. But I don't, with the way that AI and the way the tech is these days, it would be really hard to say that America could 100% rule out any kind of technology that would do this, that would spy on Trump. Also, it could be made with, or it could be, fixed, altered the plane to have a malfunctioning part that could bring it down. There could be toxins in the plane that could be, go into the aircraft, by, soon as it lifts off the ground or something like that. There could be an explosives in the plane. There could be all kinds of things in this plane that Trump would that we wouldn't be able to detect, and that Trump's life would be at risk for. Okay. So I talked about that Hamas's, having gone into Israel on October 7th was the whole point was to disrupt the Abraham Accord, disrupt other countries signing on to the Abraham Accord. I mentioned Putin and, dun 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 dun. What is that? How close are they? What does that mean? How close is their connection to Putin and all of that? And then now you have to remember also one little advantage or something to note is that Trump's son-in-law is Jewish. His daughter converted to Judaism. They are raising their children Jewish. His son-in-law, as I mentioned, had a part helped in getting the Abraham Accord put into effect. So there are lots of reasons why Trump want to believe that Trump's loyalty really lies with Israel. And as I said, Israel is the canary in the coal mine. If Israel goes, America goes. So that is his number one reason for supporting Israel and America against terrorism. So I choose to have faith in Trump that he has aces up his sleeve, and time will tell. So thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. Again, I urge you to check out my website, terroristtherapist.com. And also my book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. And again, thank you for listening. And we really have to pay attention to times are, these are very critical times and things can change in a heartbeat. But I have my faith in Trump.
If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism4kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.